The Diary of a CTO podcast. Sharing the secrets of successful CTOs. Brought to you by Trumor, the home of technology recruitment. Hosted by Guy Bevington.
Okay, so Alex, welcome. Thanks for being here with us today. So Alex, by way of introduction, you are the CTO of Neuron. Within Willis Towers Watson. Neuron, a very exciting incubation startup within WTW, and you're building a new innovative digital trading platform for commercial insurers and brokers, as I understand it. So really encouraging, I think, to see initiatives like Neuron in the insurance space, especially from big name insurers like WTW. My experience, insurance is an industry, a very traditional industry in many ways, and obviously steeped in heritage, which is kind of what you want from a brand reputation and sort of trust perspective, I guess. But in the same breath, makes it, I think, a real exciting ground for, it's very primed for technological innovation, and obviously lots of areas where tech can add a huge amount of value. So, yeah, really keen to hear a little bit more about your role, some of the work that you're doing there, and a bit more about your approach as a leader today. So thanks for being with us. But before we go into that, it'd be lovely to just hear a little bit more about you, your background, and ultimately you as a leader. So talk us through a little bit, if you'd be so kind, as to, your journey into technology and to date where we are as the CTO of Neuron, and we'll go from there.
First of all, thanks for having me.
It's more than welcome.
Excellent to chat about these sort of things. And where do I come from? So I've always been a nerd, a card-carrying Star Trek fan nerd.
Trek, okay.
Absolutely.
More than Star Wars. Interesting.
It's a broad church. There's room for all sorts of stuff.
Cool.
Brought up with in a family that liked technology, was interested in technology, and that led me down that kind of route. So went into to university and doing a computing degree at university.
Cool.
And then after a brief stint with what was then Her Majesty's Government, moved into software companies. So started in internal IT, so this is proper sysadmin stuff, looking after mail servers and the IP routing and cabling and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and then moving into things like software support, and it was coming up to 11 years ago now. Was looking for another move, looking for a physical as well as a move of job, saw an opportunity coming up at what was then Towers Watson.
Yeah.
Working in their ICT, which is insurance consulting and technology arm, so very much insurer focused, and working in their support team for all of their software products, which was fascinating. The financial services industry is generally quite interesting to me, and probably not something that many people say, but
you're right, not many.
And I think it. To a degree, I've probably drunk the Kool-Aid on it. I think it's quite a noble industry. I think it does good for the world.
I'd agree.
I know that not everyone would, but that's where my head is.
Keeps the cogs turning, if you ask me.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a lot of things that you couldn't do without insurance.
100%.
And that's not just individuals. That's almost everything in the world.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Joined that team and sort of slowly moved around various things in the team. We started doing work in the consulting part of the business, the technology consulting part of the business, which led me to specialize in a really interesting tool called Radar and Radar Live.
Okay.
Which, if you've ever bought motor insurance in the UK, you've probably used Radar Live without knowing it.
Interesting. I have not heard of it, and I definitely have bought insurance.
As is always the case with the business to business, and particularly in the insurance industry, like with WTW, I'm sure most people have not heard of this 45,000 person company. You don't necessarily hear about what's going on behind the scenes.
True.
If you've got an insurance quote on confused.com or Compare the Market, at least some of what came back there will have been algorithmically generated by Radar Live. So the quote's coming back at responding in hundreds of milliseconds to give you an accurate, personalised quote. That's a really, really fascinating thing to work in.
Absolutely.
So specialised in that, and an opportunity came to actually work within the product team itself. And I've always been driven to try and do something that makes a difference and make a change and have an impact.
Yeah.
And that posed the opportunity for me to actually look at this software and go, I really like it, but I think it could do this. I think it could work that way. I think I could make it better. And then I can see what's coming from that. And that's kind of what drives me. So I end up as a product lead for Radar Life. Radar Life's used all over the world. It's used in loads of different types of insurance. I've used the motor example, but it's used in commercial insurance as well.
Okay.
And that's sort of what led me towards the Neuron opportunity. So whilst looking at that, we had we in WTW run these projects called Horizon Projects, and the idea is to innovate, to think of what new interesting things could be around the corner and how the company might deal with them, how they might get ahead of the game. Very very early in this this opportunity, Veneuron got almost peeping around the door, going, "What's all this? This looks interesting." And because the technologies were kind of adjacent, the field of expertise were kind of adjacent, they opened the door for me. So we went through that project, and that got turned into something real. And that's what we're working on now, which is Neuron, that gave me the opportunity to pick that up as the CTO within Neuron. So I've been with WTW now in its various guises over 11 years, and moved from place to place over time, and sort of extended my career there. 11 years in one job would probably be a bit much, but you know, doing
sounds like you've been keeping it varied, keeping it interesting.
Exactly, which is, exactly.
The key, isn't it?
Consistent, but not the same. Following that path, and now having the opportunity again to make significant, meaningful change, and I think the opportunity in commercial insurance is particularly interesting. But what you said, the insurance is steeped in tradition, but that makes it prime for disruption, but positive disruption. And I've always said that insurance is a trailing indicator of technology within a sector that's a trailing indicator of technology, and commercial insurance is a trading indicator in insurance of technology. So it's not bad or good, it just is. What it does give you the opportunity to do is go, well, what changes have we seen coming? What changes happened in banking? What happened in personal insurance? And how we can extrapolate from that what might happen in commercial insurance, and take advantage of the learnings of what other parts of the sector have done.
Yeah. Fantastic. Great. Well, that's really, really interesting. Thanks very much for that. And do you feel that insurance, was that always a domain that kind of called out to you as something? Did you ever consider other industries or other domains, or did you kind of just follow your nose and actually realise it was a very interesting field and look to kind of solve further problems in that area?
It's a little bit following my nose. I'm sure that there are people who from a very young age are interested in insurance, and they're probably quite overlapped with people who are interested in mathematics. And I wouldn't say I wasn't interested in mathematics, but there's a difference between interest and ability, right? it wasn't a career direction I had in mind. But when you're starting to look, you know, early career coming out of school or university, and you start to look at opportunities, and first of all, software is something that had always been of interest. I kind of always wanted to work in the software industry in some way. And I came out of university 2004-ish. I'm old enough now that I can't even remember what year it is. It's quite depressing, isn't it? And so there's obvious things happening then. The dot-com bubble has just burst, but there's these big organizations that are coming out of that. Microsoft is ubiquitous. Apple is coming up. Google is there or thereabouts. So there's the obvious thing, I really like to work for Apple. But actually sometimes the interesting path is the path less trodden. I've essentially been working in financial services, software organizations in one way or another for most of my career. And it's interesting enough, varied enough, and I feel like you're making enough of a difference that it's never been something I thought, I'm sick of this now. There's nothing new to do here. There is always something new to do.
Absolutely. And like you say, the fact you've been able to wear many hats and take different roles, I think it's definitely, I'm sure, kept it interesting for you. I quite like, you know, when you're talking about your story there, the fact you've kind of come into that CTO role. I guess the CTO role is so subjective, right? Depending on the company, you know, the domain, the size, the maturity of the business. I like what you mentioned about how you've kind of come into it from a product lead you know, perspective. And I was having this conversation with the CEO the other day where we were talking about, you know, what is it to be a CTO today? You know, historically, when I first started in recruitment, it was basically the head honcho in a technology department that oversaw probably both software development and infrastructure, as it was at the time. And whereas now, you know, technology is becoming the beating heart of so many businesses, and there's so many other things to be aware of and different sort of parameters, I believe, to be a successful CTO. But one of the key things I think we're seeing more and more of is an awareness of product, you know, and concepts around product, and becoming, you know, most businesses are trying to become more product-led business. So how do you feel your background in product has helped you, you know, be successful in the role of a CTO?
Particularly in this role, we are building a product. It is the beating heart of what we're doing, which means you can be very focused. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not trying to build 10 different things. We're trying to build one thing and build it very well. So having the entire organization structured around and understanding that what our really simple goals are is incredibly powerful. And mm-hmm. from a technology perspective, being able to see not just through the lens of, well, we've got to put this wire next to this wire and build that API and not really have the context is, I'm sure you'd get there. Yeah. But the way you get there well is by having a broader recognition of what technology is there to do, yeah. which is to help drive the product, to help drive the business.
Absolutely.
But technology is an enabler. It's not there to tell the rest of the business what to do.
Yeah.
And yeah. coming through from a product perspective and through product design, I think it gives you that view of going, okay, I understand the why, mm-hmm. I understand the point, and I understand the difficulties from a product perspective of juggling those customer-facing, back-end-facing priorities, aligning that with the priorities of the business and that constant juggle.
Yeah.
And when you can see the technology delivery through that lens as well, it's an extra piece of information, it's an extra way of establishing what the right thing to do next is, rather than just focusing on the, you know, list of technology issues to solve or technology actions to take.
Yes.
And be holistic.
Yes, yeah, totally agree. You know, it's one of the biggest differentiators I see in what I would classify as some of the more successful CTAs is that kind of seismic shift in mindset of, you know, it's not technology for the sake of technology and technology is it's like you say, it's understanding how you can harness technology to be the enabler for the business. And I think the people that sort of have cottoned on to that have really gone on and been very successful. So yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from there. So yeah, in terms of your journey as a leader, you know, in the role of CTO, talk me through what do you feel are some of the most valuable qualities of a CTO, of a technology leader? I guess it could be from a strategic point of view or from a people management point of view, but yeah, what do you feel?
Well, I think you've already touched a little bit. It is seeing technology not just as technology for its own sake. It is having that view of what your business goals are and seeing technology as a mechanism to help deliver that. Hopefully gone are the days of people having an issue with their technology, be that their mail system's not working, their laptop's not working, or whatever, and fearing the idea of having to go to the IT department because they're just going to say no to me again, or they're going to fob me off again.
I always think of The Office.
Yeah, exactly. What you need is an IT department and an IT function, so it doesn't matter whether or not it's support, it's software delivery, whatever it is, that is very, very conscious that it's there to help the business achieve the business goals. Yeah. And that's got to be something that anyone coming into a CTO role needs to understand. You're a custodian of the technology, but you are just part of the business.
Yeah.
And you're not the most important part, you're not the least important part, you're just another part that can help drive drive business value, drive growth.
Yeah, I often equate that to I don't know if you're an F1 fan, but I've got quite into F1 over the last few years. Actually, since the Netflix documentary Drive to Survive has kind of ignited my passion in it a bit, I'm amazed within that. And I think there's a lot of parallels between high-performing teams in general, but I do see a lot of parallels between technology and how that works, and how, like I say, no one is more important than the other. It should all sort of work together in one. It's very easy to think actually the driver might be the most important person in the team, but actually unless the infrastructure's there behind them and the support network's there, it's not the case.
Analogy I loved, one of my old bosses told me this analogy, was that someone was being shown around the NASA, Cape Kennedy, back in the 60s.
Yeah.
And asked a janitor what his job was, and he said to put man on the moon.
Nice.
Because everyone in that organisation had one job.
Yeah,
it didn't matter what the subset of those jobs was.
Mm.
They were there to put man on the moon.
Nice. Yeah, that's a big sign, I think, of a successful culture of a business as well. Like I say, you talked a little bit earlier about it's nice to be so focused, but I think being able to articulate that clarity, definitely is something. It's something that a lot of when we're dealing with candidates, it's something that a lot of people look for. It's like, what is the mission of the business? Do they actually know what it is? Do they know where they want to go? And I think being able to articulate that across all levels to get everybody sort of working together in a cohesive way moving forward is a sign of a very good business.
Context is king, right? If you don't know what you're doing, and I don't mean today I'm picking that user story and I'm working on that user story.
Yeah.
If you don't know why you're doing that, then can you be as effective?
Yeah.
I don't think you can.
No.
And if you make sure that everyone in the business does have context and is bought in, you're going to get the best possible performance out of them, because they're turning up to work with a reason, and it's not just because I get paid at the end of the month.
Yeah,
sure, that helps. But I'm because I'm going to get paid at the end of the month, because I'm building this awesome thing that is going to have this impact.
And
that's the reason to come in, and that's a reason to enjoy your job.
Yeah, absolutely. There's power in that clarity, isn't there? I think, in people. And also, I think it helps foster a culture of trust as well. Mm. Often when people, and I think equating this a little bit to recruitment, where, people think they're literally just coming in to do a job to line someone else's pockets or, make somebody else rich or whatever it may be. And, until that sort of real mission is conveyed and clarified to people, it can have a real sense of leaders being quite disingenuous about why people are doing jobs and that kind of thing. So I think there's a real piece there about communicating it to everybody and, building that trust. But I totally agree with you there. Cool. So talk us through then. You've obviously had this really successful career within WTW and now spearheading the growth of Neuron. But talk us through that first year, I guess, because you must have been having a blank sheet of paper in front of you. How did you tackle that first year as an incubation startup as the CTO?
Great question. Coming in and having a completely green field. Okay, so we know what we want to do. How are we going to do it? It's definitely daunting.
Mm.
And you could just start picking off random bits of work and just completely fail to deliver anything whilst doing a huge amount of work. What we tried to do, and it was a really small team to start with, so you don't want to chuck hundreds of people randomly into something when you don't know exactly how you're going to achieve it. So what we focused on was understanding, right, we've got this great idea, it's applicable to a really big market, and what's the easiest way of failing is to try and address that entire market in one go.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? What part of this market has the best value, or maybe the easiest in, or provides us with a really good technology backbone? And it took a little bit of time, because there's a lot of options. There's a lot of people who have really good opinions, and that we needed to get. We needed a dump of their knowledge so that we could make an informed decision about what part of the market to go into. So a lot of time focused there. My view on that was, to be glib, not that I don't care, but what I want is an answer.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can spend so long trying to get to the perfect answer, you don't get an answer at all. And there is nothing worse than no answer.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if it's perfect. It doesn't matter if it's the exactly right answer. As long as it's directionally correct, that gives the opportunity to start doing something.
Yeah.
So working through that, getting to that. In the meantime, looking at, okay, based on what we know today, what no regret stuff that we can do? How far can we go before we start doing stuff we have to backtrack on?
Okay.
And how far can we go before we're building in an amount of technical debt that's actually going to mean that we can't backtrack, or that it's going to cost us significant amounts to backtrack, so that we don't go too far, so we don't get too far out in front of our skis. Because what's the best thing about day one of something like this? It's the only day in the entire lifespan of your software where you don't have any technical debt. It's all downhill from there.
So pessimistic, but also very true.
let's be honest. You know, there's nothing wrong with technical debt, as long as you understand it, as long as you've created it knowingly, and as long as you have a plan on how you're going to deal with it. It's absolutely fine. Just like financial debt isn't fundamentally bad. Sometimes you have to have some debt to do something useful, to do something good.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you don't want to generate too much of it. You don't want to go down too many blind alleys. So we started working on what that core piece of capability was going to be whilst we were making some of those decisions about market direction of travel. And then once we'd honed in on that, frankly, relentless focus on scope.
Okay.
Just, I described myself to a lot of people as the machete of their dreams. Because the job was, I hear what you're saying, this is lovely, and I definitely want that too. But what do you need? Do you definitely need that? Is that definitely a day one requirement? And I'm going to push you really hard on this, because if it's a day one requirement, day one's going to be further away.
Mm.
And so building that culture into the team of honest, open debate about what is actually required,
mm.
and giving people the scope to feel like they could raise that, giving mm. people the space to feel like they could raise that, and the empowerment to ask those questions and ask difficult yeah. questions of anyone. Because mm. back to understanding context, if you understand the context, that's half of the value. The other half of the value is being able to feel like you can push back against that context and go, yeah. but why?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think I've got a better idea. Because you know where some of the best ideas can come from? It's literally anyone.
Yeah.
So building a team that felt like they could have that conversation with whomever happened to be in the room at the time.
Mm.
So that's really what the first year looked like, was building a team of people who felt they could do that, being really, really relentless on that scope.
Yeah.
And inevitably making sure that we had a good understanding of what we actually wanted to target, what we actually mm. wanted to do, and not meander and flip-flop between different options. So that's yeah. what we did, and that's where we're going to this year.
Excellent. I mean, it feels like just hearing you talking there, you know, the pushback to the business and the clarity, you know, to hold stakeholders to account with those, you know, is that actually vital? Do we need those? It feels again like your product background, your product expertise there would have been particularly useful in those kind of scenarios, like pushing back on, you know, what are the vital features versus the nice to have, so on and so forth. And, you know, I can imagine that's a very empowering place to be as a leader, but in the same breath, the people in your team probably also very grateful that you're able to do that for them. You know, I'm sure it would command you a lot of respect from the team as well, to make sure everyone's sort of being kept in, you know, on line.
I think it gives you a somewhat of an intrinsic ability to look at something and go, I reckon that's going to take about so long to do-ish. Mm. And anyone in my team who's listening to this now will be either laughing or gnawing their teeth, because I've definitely not got it right every single time, or even close every single time. But you get a feel for
yeah.
what's really big and really hard,
yeah.
and what's actually okay, we can manage that. And it's not always what you expect. You know, someone yeah. might say, oh, well, you know, we just need you to add this one field so we can do that. That can't be that hard, right? How do I explain to you what the downstream ramifications of that are going to
yeah,
be because
yeah.
of what you've asked for, versus, oh, we need to do this huge change and just, you know, fundamentally change the way this whole website looks. And actually, that's quite easy, because we've got tools these days that make that not instantaneous, but it is actually quite a simple task. So differentiating between what looks hard and what is hard.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you go about that process of engaging the business? And because stakeholder management, I think, is one of the, like we talked about earlier, the perception sometimes of technology and the way it's viewed in the business. And again, not sort of conscribing to any stigma or stereotype, but, you know, historically there probably has been a little bit of that arrogance associated maybe with sort of very senior technology leaders prior to people understanding technology within the business. So how do you have any particular approaches or styles that you take to ingratiate yourself with the business and, you know, you sort of really engage and maintain strong relationships with senior stakeholders?
It is difficult, and it's difficult wherever you are in technology, cry me a river, right? But you only hear about technology products when something's gone horribly wrong. Technology products and something's gone horribly wrong.
Yeah,
often. Because something was delivered successfully on time and within budget doesn't tend to make the headlines, right? When I worked in IT support, the view was, what's the best you can absolutely possibly achieve is that no one knows you're there, because that means nothing's gone wrong, which is a little bit of a nihilistic
view. Quite a
life,
but, a happy life. Yeah.
But the reason that these projects get in the news and the reason that people feel so strongly about them is not that they went over time and over budget, it's that they were promised to be delivered at a certain time, and IT has a tendency to be highly confident of something right up until the point at which it's not.
Mm.
So what I try and do is be as open and clear as possible in terms of, so back to that project product background, give you early eyes. Look, you're talking about this piece of capability. It is going to have a material impact. Can I tell you what that is right now? No, but I can tell you it's going to have a material impact.
Yeah.
Start to unveil some of the why of that. And whilst it can be difficult to start to explain technology concepts to non-technical people, I think it's important to try and do that and to try and break it down into, you know, without coming across as arrogant.
Yeah.
Trying to explain something in terms that actually make it possible to understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's massively important. Massively important.
Yeah, so don't just sit behind long words and acronyms, because that's the kind of thing that gets people's backs up, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then the other thing, frankly, is deliver. Do what you said you were going to do.
Yeah.
And you can do that by being really focused on the scope of what you're doing, because when you have a tight scope, you can say, right, you're going to have this in 2 months' time. Have it in 2 months' time.
Mm.
Or if you think that there's going to be a problem with that, scope creeps, right? Things come up, problems happen whilst you're developing software. Problems happen whilst you're installing and implementing systems. Don't try and hide it until it's too late to do something about it. Don't try and hide it until people are going to find out when the thing they wanted isn't there.
Yeah.
It's much better to say, okay, we're 6 months out, but it's going to be an extra month, and here's why it's going to be an extra month.
Yeah.
And as long as people are informed and they understand, okay, the immediate reaction is no one ever wants to hear bad news.
Yeah.
But the long-term reaction of that is going to be, okay, when I talk to this group of people, I know that they're telling me everything that is true to the best of their knowledge now. They will always try and help me understand. They will always inform me when things change, so I can trust them.
Yeah, absolutely. What I love about your answer there, I think, you know, a lot of it is fundamental psychology of just dealing with people in the right way, and like I say, regular contact, managing expectations. I think that sort of transcends technology, and it's just good management, you know, in all sort of walks of life. Absolutely.
Frankly, it's good manners.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's very true. But I think also the great point you made there about the fine line to tread. I totally would agree with you, and it's something that I've seen also as a trait of real quality CTO, is somebody that can take those very complex concepts and voice them in a non-complex way to maybe non-technical people, but like you say, in that fine line of not coming across like you're mansplaining or, you know, arrogant, and it's but also not too, you know, acronym heavy, and it's sort of treading that balance in the middle. But people that get that right, I think, really can engage people and win hearts and minds and take people on that journey. People that sort of, you know, unfortunately don't tread the line can often leave people behind, and you know, see the relationship suffers as a result.
You're not going to get it right every time, and sometimes things are just weird. And it can be difficult to explain, although you can start by saying this thing is just weird, it's difficult to explain.
Which is simple enough for most people to understand, so isn't it?
But if you're trying to win that trust of someone by explaining them, talking from through a technical issue, doesn't matter if that's technology or anything else, ask yourself the question when you try and answer it, why? But why?
Yeah.
So why is it this way, or so what? Because if you can start to get down to the point at which you're answering that's actually what you need to be saying. Mm. It's not, oh well, we've got this architecture and you see it's all very clever because it does these things. Oh, but why? Well, actually, it's the but why that the person wants to hear, not the clever.
True. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said before, it's like the reason that sits behind the tech. I can resonate with that absolutely. You mentioned there that, you know, you don't always get it right, and of course any CTO, you know, will come with war stories and battle scars, I'm sure. But what would you say has been, you know, the biggest challenges that you faced in this role as a CTO, and how have you overcome them?
It's a great question. I think it probably has been getting the technical solution understood by a really wide range of people, and navigating that difference between the perceived complex and the actual complex. Sure. Because when you're talking about something like we're doing, it's all about moving quickly, it's all about pace, and getting what you want into the market. You have to appreciate that your stakeholders, your investors are going to be pushing hard to say, well, that sounds easy, why can't that be done at a different speed? And equally, they will sometimes go, oh, I'm really surprised that went as fast as it did. So the challenge, I think the biggest challenge for me has always been making sure that what we're doing and why we're doing it is understood by the people who are inevitably signing the checks or have a stake in the game. And the way I've solved it's by communication. It's by trying to be as clear and specific as possible. Don't use 10 words when 2 would do. And we're British, that's our natural tendency, I think. Don't use complex words when simple words would do. And again, particularly in business, we like to put flowery words on things and start to it's like that the risk of PowerPoint, isn't it, that you start just flourishing. Keep it simple. And people appreciate it, people understand it, and that helps them come along the journey. So big challenge, bringing people along, making them understand, making them feel comfortable that what you're doing is the right thing to do. Solution, communication, being simple, being honest.
A lot of very admirable traits there, absolutely, as of a leader. So when we talk about traits of a leader, you've obviously demonstrated quite a few of you know, what I would say are very important traits to be a successful CTO. Do you look for similar traits when it comes to people that you bring into your team? Because I'm sure building a platform like this would be a myriad of different skill sets from a technical perspective, obviously, that you would need to find to build such a platform. But do you hire for a particular mindset, a particular mentality, a sort of set of characteristics that sort of runs through people within your business? You know, how do you go about building a diverse team, and what do you look for?
You can't just have the same type of person saying, oh, we want people to have the right cultural fit. That's a dangerous thing to say, I think, because what you can risk there is just having a group of people that think exactly the same way, and then you've just got groupthink, and you'll always try and solve problems in exactly the same way.
Yeah.
Diversity breeds the opportunity to solve problems and think about them differently.
Absolutely.
So you definitely don't just want to have a group of people who who think in exactly the same way. But equally, what you are looking for is two different things. It is that technical expertise in the area that person is working, and the ability to be able to communicate effectively with other people. I keep on coming back to communication here, but I think it's important.
It's a reason, yeah. You know. I agree with you. Yeah.
And I think probably unfairly in on the technology side of the business, people are seen as not maybe the best at communication. So there is a stereotype of what a developer looks like, right? It's not true, but people think, oh well, they get down, they put their headphones on, they tap away at a keyboard for 8 hours a day, they don't speak to anyone, and they come home. Okay, I'm sure you can find me an example of people like that. And there's nothing fundamentally wrong with that. And they've demonstrated an amazing technical skill if they're like that. But what we also want to see is someone who can go, okay, well, I know when I've got a problem and when I need to seek help. Mm. And I know when the right time to try and solve it myself is and when it's time to seek outside support.
Yeah.
I nearly said give up, and that was the wrong word, because it's not giving up to go and seek help. It is knowing that you're now investing the wrong time in a problem. So that's what I look for, is that technical skill. You can't just bring someone in who just doesn't have the skills that you need for a particular role. Sometimes you need a lower set of skills, or you have the time and opportunity to of a growth opportunity for someone, so that's fine. That's just different levels of the same thing. But you do always want to make sure you can bring in people who can communicate with their peers, can communicate with their reports and their managers in an effective way. Yeah. So when I'm interviewing, when I'm building a team, that's what I'm trying to find in someone. Yeah. Nice. It's pretty easy to prove a technical skill because it's quite black and white-ish. You can demonstrate it or you can't demonstrate it. Mm. And it can be quite difficult to establish in a small number of hours at best whether or not someone is going to fulfill that other side of things.
Yeah.
But then the other factor is sometimes you come across someone who's just got such an amazing piece of capability in one area, and you have to ask yourself, well, how important are the two sides of this? How important is the balance? Can I help that person in a different way? Can I support them in a different way so that they can flourish in that skill that they're demonstrating so excellently, and we can help them work on the other side of things? Because just constantly requiring it, everyone is different, everyone has a different way of thinking, working, communicating. You just need to find a way of getting out of them. And to lose someone who has an excellent developer head because they're insular, it's not a good reason. You've got to think about how that person could be supported to get the best out of them and help them with a career as well.
Absolutely. And it gets back to your point about, I think, diversity, doesn't it? You know, if there are certain attributes and characteristics, like, say, as a core thread that you would probably look for in the majority of people. And I totally agree with you there, that balance between technical expertise and pragmatism and not letting ego get in the way of actually advancing what you're doing. But in the same breath, I think sometimes you will find that superstar that's just very good at that thing, and it does bring a balance, to the team. It's a different perspective, and I totally agree with you around the point around culture as well. I think that's one of the biggest things I will push back onto a client, and often ask the question of, when you say you want the right culture fit, culture in my eyes it's an organic thing that's bred from the people you have in the business. You can't be a top-down culture of this is our culture and we hire people within that, because you can do that, but ultimately you're, like say, going to get cookie cutter sort of mentality, everyone's the same. To really build a true culture, it should be something that's fed from the people within the company that create the culture, rather than being specified at board level.
Agree. Control culture can be an excuse, and it's not a good one. So, for example, we have a culture of people who are excellent communicators at all level. Great, okay, but what if you are neurodiverse and that you struggle with speaking to other people? That doesn't necessarily make you bad at the job. What it means is that you have a different set of skills, and you might not appear to be the right cultural fit. That's the business losing out.
Yeah.
So totally. You can't just operate on that narrow one level culture.
Yeah.
You have to think about a combination of things. What's the skill set I need? What's right for my business? How can I get different viewpoints? But how can I create an environment? How can I make sure I've got a group of people that function well together?
Yes.
Because ultimately, through whatever method you're talking about, what you're trying to get to is a group of people who work brilliantly together and are better than each of the individuals in that team.
Yeah, absolutely. And similarly, I've had conversations with CTOs in the past where they're talking about building a team and saying, well, I just want to hire senior developers. I haven't got time or to train anyone up. And I'm kind of like, okay, I get the logic and the concept behind it, but often the least collaborative teams are the ones where you've got so many people with that are very good, that know what they're doing. That level of kind of ego around them, it's probably the worst thing you can do to actually build a cohesive collaborative team.
Sounds like an expensive way to fail to me.
Exactly.
You need people of different skill levels.
Mm.
It really bugs me when you see requests coming in for we need a junior dev, but they've had to have 5 years experience.
Mm.
Okay, but how are they going to get that experience? Yeah. Sometimes you do actually have to build your own talent.
Mm.
And what you get out of that is eventually you'll get the senior resource, but they've grown up in your organization. They're going to be more passionate about your organization if they stay. And if they don't, they don't. That's fine. But you're creating your own future that way.
Mm.
If you start off by just saying, right, we're only going to bring in seniors, what's your succession plan for them?
Mm, absolutely.
And what's the opportunities for them?
Absolutely.
That's not to say you should start off with only juniors either, but you need that broad range of different people, different skill sets, different levels within their skill set.
Absolutely. Well, Alex, I have really enjoyed the chat today, and I can see why you are very successful in the job that you do. You speak a lot of sense, a lot of really good points made, and a lot of value shared. And I like to end every podcast, as you may know by now, just to ask for your favourite piece of advice that you've ever been given, throughout your career, that you would care to share with your fellow humankind. Is there anything that particularly springs to mind?
Yeah, best piece of advice I was ever given was I was told you've either got no top priorities or you've got one top priority. Because as soon as you've got more than one, you're back to having none again.
Very, very good point. Yeah, I like that. I've not heard that before. Put that in the back pocket. Brilliant. All right, well, thanks again for coming in. Really enjoyed our chat. And I wish you all the very best with Neuron. I'm sure it'll be a roaring success. And I will keep my eye very closely on things for the future. But yeah, thanks again. And we'll speak soon, I'm sure.
Much appreciated. Great chat.